And now welcome to the twice-monthly short-form program, Taking Simple Steps with Donna Marie, sharing her process of transitioning to a more sustainable lifestyle and the simple steps she is taking to get there.
Things are falling apart, perhaps because we've taken them apart. Dissecting life has left us fragmented. We now fend for ourselves. We build stores and make products for private gain, not communal benefit. Driving down State Road 70 last week, I spotted a bright new bustling gas station across the street from the one I frequent, now vacant. Saddened, I turned the corner to see bulldozers unearthing clusters of pine for new house construction. Roots exposed, soil upturned, lush and lovely landscape lay desecrated. I averted my eyes to see for sign sales sitting affront deserted homes. "We've no coherency," I whispered. As kindergartners, we are introduced to our friendly neighborhood helpers, the storekeeper, nurse, and farmer. We play act in partnership, benefiting all. Then grow up, forget this idyllic vision, enter a race, struggle to be on top, have the most, look the best. We find ourselves grappling with the illusion of having and doing it all. Jesus said we're members of one body, not all hands nor eyes, but many parts. How is it we've lost sight of our membership? Writer Helena Norberg Hodge tells of living with an ancient community, the Ladakhis of Little Tibet. As a Westerner, she's amazed at their intactness, built on the Buddhist concept of sunyata, or emptiness. A native explains, "Take anything like a tree. You tend to think of it as a distinct, clearly defined object, and on a certain level it is. But on a more important level, the tree has no independent existence. Rather, it dissolves into a web of relationships. The rain that falls on the leaves, the wind that causes it to sway, the soil that supports it, all form part of the tree. Ultimately, everything helps make the tree. It can't be isolated. This is what we mean," he says, "when we say things are empty. They have no independent existence." As a teacher, I see children brimming with expectation, eager to cooperate in learning grown-up skills, longing to fit in and take their place. Their desire to be part of the dance of life is innate. Yet, as young adults, their soft, warm aspirations are often uprooted as hollow, monolithic systems disparage them to replace their dreams with the real world of competition and control. This is our modern initiation rite. Our economic, healthcare, and education systems falter precisely because they're not built on the life-giving ideals youth bring to bear. Like an adolescent rejecting the guidance of ancient and natural ways, Western civilization has tried to remake the world. Yet our crusade of industrial growth has created wasteland rather than wonderland, Thomas Berry reminds us. We now search through rubble for reasons and restoration. When folks were farmers and craftspersons, work sprung from basic needs. Beans had to be picked, wood chopped, cotton spun. A full belly, warm hearth, and fresh linens were work's goal and reward. Work flowed from and into life. Newfangled factory model jobs have raised efficiency and productivity, giving us material abundance kings haven't known, yet shredding our social fabric. Folks were lured or wrenched from self-sufficient, interpersonal homesteads and communities to dependence on the impersonal marketplace, where the number of phone calls and emails answered a day, not this eye strain or mental clarity of the receptionist, matters. Earning money has become our only reward and is never enough. People need to feel they make a contribution to their community, behavioral economist Barry Schwartz says. He tells of Yale researchers' surprise when interviewing hospital janitors whose job description includes duties like dusting lamps, washing windows, and other mundane acts. Yet custodian Mike stopped mopping the floor because Mr. Jones was out of bed, walking up and down the hall to build his strength. and Charlene ignored her supervisor's order and didn't vacuum the visitor's lounge while family members were taking a nap. These custodians wove their work into the health care of their patients. Yet in some jobs, it takes heroic efforts to do the right thing amidst expected requirements. An anonymous teacher confessed in the Sun magazine's Reader's Corner, she's forced to follow curriculum she knows isn't accessible to some of her students. Yet she's paid based on her students' test scores. So she calls parents of those who can't keep focused, tells them of their child's issue, and strongly suggests their children get tested and medicated. Once done, she manages her class and meets state standards. Desperate to meet the bottom line, we drop hold of each other. Evolutionary biologist William Muir studied the productivity of chickens. He watched two flocks, one of average and one of prolific chickens, super chickens. The super flock was rechosen each generation for the top breeders. After six generations, the average chickens were plump, fully feathered, and egg production was greatly increased. But all but three of the super chickens had pecked each other to death, contending to be the best. For the past 50 years, we've run most organizations and some societies along the super chicken model, says sociologist Barbara Heffernan. Yet studies show the most productive groups are those whose members are sensitive to each other's needs and allow everyone to have a voice and none to loaf. Relationships matter. Mathematician Michael Schneider says, where we see discrete objects, ancient mathematical philosophers saw processes. To us, cosmos means outer space, a huge room filled with disconnected things. To the Greeks, cosmos meant embroidery, an orderliness and harmony of woven patterns with which the universe unfolds. We think and act as if we're separate, while in fact, we're infinitely connected. It's time we grow into this awareness and weave our frayed threads back into the fabric of life. As we sit at our desks alone, unraveled, we can think of the person whose life our work affects and keep them in sight. When we shop for clothes, we can consider, under what conditions did someone sew these seams and only buy what's manufactured humanely? When we choose a store to frequent, we can ask, how well are the cashier and stock people treated and paid? And we can put our money into organizations that build well-being among their staff. We can start calculating real costs when we look for the best buys. Economists should factor social and environmental well-being into gross national product to more accurately reflect the state of our nation. For what we do to and for each other matters. After all, we're woven into each other's world. This has been Donna Marie, hoping we're all taking simple steps towards mending the fabric of life.
You can find this and other entries of Taking Simple Steps at takingsimplesteps.wordpress.com and in the blog listings at transitionsarasota.org.